As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Captain Midnight! Brought to you every day, Monday through Friday at this same time, Captain Midnight is a new program to many of our listeners. It is written for red-blooded young Americans, for boys and girls, yes, and for mother and dad, too. For everyone who's young in spirit. Captain Midnight will bring you plenty of excitement.
Time for a monologue. Suspense,
thrills galore. It lets you live a story of real adventure.
Yeah, anxious?
In the air and on the ground. You'll never want to miss a single broadcast of Captain Midnight, and you'll want all your friends to enjoy it, too.
It smells like smoke and coffee in here, and I'm not sure why that's the case. All right, so Steve Summers, the legend, he is here, you there. That's the name of the book, Me Here, You There, comes out November 18th. I read it over the course of the last 2 days. I loved every second of it. How you been, Steve?
Well, I'm good, guys, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to provide a shameless plug.
It's great to have you.
And can I read this?
Yes, go ahead. Of course.
Well, it's a little bit what you just said. Me, Here, You, There, coming out November 18. You can pre-order on Amazon. Book signings and appearance to be announced in the future.
Whoa.
Look out. And you can go to the Twitter X page, Steve Summers, WFAN, and it is the printed or pined post. And you can also listen to my podcast, Me, Hear, You, There. But you're not missing anything if you do miss it.
We miss you. People miss you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Do you miss doing this?
Well, yes and no. I'm not on a schedule. I'm not on a deadline. But, yeah, because how do you really retire from talking? And I miss because the podcast, we're not able at this point to take any calls. And we still do some production pieces. Paul R. Zuman of WFAN helps us with that. But yes and no. But I watch a lot of horror movies. And also I watch CNN, which tells you I'm not a Trumpican. But the bottom line...
Don't get us in trouble.
But I go back and forth with what is common sense and... what is right and versus wrong. But anyway, the bottom line is, no, I spend time with the wife and with the mother-in-law, the family.
Oh, how fun is that?
Yeah. Please get me back on the air.
I was going to say, start another podcast. Get out of that. You know, go food chopping like that. So Steve, it is. You're okay, Stevie?
Yeah. Oh, it's the phlegm, the mucus,
gotcha.
The Marshall Barley. See, when you're my age, the phlegm is there all the time.
It is awesome to have you in. And Sal worked with you, and Hoff worked with you. I used to listen to you, as we all did. I remember coming back from college, and my mom would have the Walkman out. Like you know, when you go away to school, you come back, you go to the bar, you come home late. You're old enough to do whatever you want, but you're still sleeping at home. And I would fall asleep to you then in Brooklyn and up at Maris. So it's great. I want to say this to you. So we have had titans of industry here, Hall of Famers galore. I can't prove this, but I think of all the voices on the station that you probably had the most intimate connection to the listeners, more so than anybody. Did you feel that?
Well, I wanted to make friends because when I started here, I didn't know anybody anywhere in the tri-state area. My mother said there were two cousins she thought still were alive and living in New Jersey, but I couldn't look them up. I couldn't find them. I think maybe they had passed away. My mother hadn't kept in touch with them. But that is a connection I could leave alone. But I was learning the new people, learning a new job. And I said the first night on the air that if I get fired from this job, and I had been fired a number of times before, we're talking about a career that began in the 1960s, and I had successes and failures, and not ashamed to talk about it. It's part of a career in this business especially. But in the first day I was on, first night, July 1 of 87, I said, if I get fired from this job, it won't be for lack of effort. So growing up, this was my goal. This was my dream. This was my destination. When I was in the fifth grade, and it's in the book, I wrote a paper that we were asked by the teacher, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote sports writer. And that paper is in the book. Number two, when I was about 12 or 13, anything and everything about New York being the number one city in the world, I knew from Madison Avenue, Fifth Avenue. I knew from disc jockeys here, Cousin Brucey, et cetera, et cetera.
Cousin Brucey.
And anything that in the newspaper that had a New York byline, I read with vigor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it meant something to me that Walter Cronkite was coming from New York. Anything and everything about New York meant something to me. I'd heard about, as I say, Madison Avenue, Fifth Avenue, Madison Square Garden, Rockefeller Center, on and on. And it all was a goal, a destination, a dream. And I always have said, and I think it's in the book too, that if you were to make a trip on an airplane from the left coast to the right coast, 6 hours or so, took me 22 years for that flight to happen.
Yeah, it is in the book. I just read that. Obviously, we're in studio with Steve Summers. You recognize the voice. Legendary. It was great for me to read the book and learn certain things. I've heard a lot of these stories from working with you over the years.
Yeah.
But also just gain a different perspective. You have had a tremendous career. And I think the most important thing to you, and for me, like knowing you, you talk about coming to New York and making it be your dream. You are more New York than people who have never left here before. Has that like dawned on you how New York you are and how part of the fabric you are of this city?
Well, the agent that I had at the time was from New York, from Brooklyn, and he thought I would do well here, but TV. I wanted to be Scott Clark or Len Berman. Or Warner Wolf.
Or Russ Salzberg.
Oh, absolutely.
As your boy Russ gets the banner.
I'm leaving.
Okay, I see Russ all the time. Listen, Russ is in my neighborhood. I love Russ. Just because you don't love him, I love him.
You know, we love him. Yeah, right? But here, the thing is, when Chernoff asked me, Mark Chernoff, the program director at the time, as you know, when he asked me to join Russ, I told him no, I didn't want to do it. I was happy working overnight. I was crying on the telephone talking to my mother and my father that it seems to be working, whatever it was that I was doing. Because you never know. You can be wonderful and still lose your job. And because I had a strike or two against me, I wasn't from here. I didn't grow up with Horace Clark.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with the Yankees and the Mets. I saw the Mets, of course, from Candlestick Park as a kid going to Giants games. Willie McCovey, I lived in the same building with him. He was on the top floor. I was down on the second floor.
What's that? Willie had the penthouse.
Yes, of course. And I had a studio apartment where my parents had to help me pay the rent. But he moved in after I was there. I didn't move in because of him. Yeah. But I got to know him because every morning we met with the building's maintenance guy to have coffee. So I got to know both Harold, the maintenance guy, and Willie McCovey. And when he hit his 500th home run, I was working weekend sports on TV at KPIX, a CBS affiliate there. And I announced that we had the film, no video, film of his 500th home run, which he told me the following day or two that he wanted a copy of that video of his hitting his 500th home run. Anyway, but he ended up in a wheelchair. Hall of Famer, stretch,
yeah.
MVP, 69, and so forth. And really a good guy. Unlike Willie Mays, who wasn't as popular because Willie McCovey was homegrown from Phoenix where they had AAA. And I was there at Seals Stadium where the San Francisco Seals had played. I felt bad when they were disbanded for the New York Giants coming to San Francisco. And my uncle, I went to the very first game.
Yeah, I saw you got the tickets. What
year is that?
You still have them? Because that's worth some money. You should get them graded.
Well,
I know you don't care about that because you get...
How much money? What?
Depends.
Maybe quite a bit. If you get them graded, you have the All-Star game from 61 where you were at, and then the first game ever in Candlestick. That's a big deal.
Yes, April 15 of 58. And my uncle... that I went to, my dad couldn't leave the grocery store, mom and pop. And my uncle, who I went with, who pulled my baby teeth out with his bare hands. To this day, I can't go to a dentist because of that. But anyway, my uncle, who I went to that game, I was 10, and he told me years later that I kept wondering why the New York baseball Giants were playing their home games in San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw the very first game won by the Giants, 8-0. Ruben Gomez of the Giants versus Don Drysdale.
Were they going like five, six innings?
Not then.
78 pitches?
Yeah, not then.
You get the specialist up? So, Steve, if I said, what was all the calls you've taken, all the topics?
Jerome.
Okay, I wanted to ask you your favorite call.
Okay,
and I get you, Jerome.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. What's the one topic that you never got tired talking about, no matter how many calls
baseball.
You went to? Baseball.
Yeah, and the Mets, and they adopted me, I adopted them. And I always found it puzzling that the Mets were considered, when they were losing all those games in the 60s, lovable and laughable. I felt sorry for them. I mean, and the Giants beat them. Juan Marichal had a great record against the Mets. But how could you find them lovable losing? And especially in New York, where fans care sometimes more than the players they root for do.
You know, one thing that I didn't realize, you have been at... First of all, you got in the ring with Ali, which is in the books, for three rounds with Ali.
Right, right.
You've known Rick Barry, who you said wrote something. You didn't say what he did. What did he write about you in the bio?
Well, that I was a public address announcer for the radio station's basketball team that had disc jockeys playing faculty members of high schools around the Bay Area.
Okay.
And I was a public address announcer.
So you said he mentioned you in the book.
Oh, yeah.
And how about this one? I had no idea. John Madden and the Immaculate Reception. You were there for that.
Yes.
And then watched the film afterward with Madden himself.
That's right. And we couldn't tell, even frame by frame, because it was filmed. You know, I was there with the cameraman covering the Raiders and went on the road with them to Pittsburgh for that game. And to this day, it's hard to tell, although I think that it was touched by Pittsburgh first. So it is what it is. But Madden came right back to KPIX-TV, the station that I did weekends, and we went into the film editor's booth, and frame by frame, once the film was developed,
that's amazing.
He took a one to make sure that the call was the right call, and that the because that won the game.
So, God, things have changed so much from the station to how we consume sports.
And radio has changed.
It has. There's no doubt. Yeah. And you have to evolve, and that's part of the territory. Yeah. More content.
And you guys have. You guys are very listenable.
Okay.
No, you're ahead of the curve. Wait
a minute. You've been telling me that.
I've been telling that to Sal forever, and he doesn't believe me. No, you both are very gifted. There's no question about it. And you do remind the listeners to this radio station of what it was, WFAN, what it is, and will continue to be, because you two carry that torch.
That's very nice. And we're not alone carrying that torch. But thank you very much for that, Steve. We really appreciate that. What is... bring more. The boss is a listener.
I'm not being politically correct.
What sport has changed the most? Because there have been so many changes over the years.
Oh, football, I think.
That has actually taken away your enjoyment a little bit. Like, is there a sport that's changed where it's no longer recognizable?
Well, because I'm in a pool, you know, I'm more interested in these games. The rules and the officiating is terrible, generally speaking. They get a lot of close calls right upon further review. However, they miss a lot also. And sometimes they don't even bring the chains out. It looks as though somebody has stopped short, and they still give a first down. But the rules with baseball have changed, and so has football. And because those two sports I watch intensely, religiously, I think you can find more of the rule changes in those two sports more than others.
And real fast, think about this, talk about changes, right? So when you're on the air, 87, into the 90s, into the early 2000s, and obviously beyond, you know, you're not talking about gambling. If somebody calls you and they want to reference a point spread, or it's meeting a guy on the corner and handing over cash or doing something illegal, now think about the way gambling has really, I don't want to say overtaken things, but it's a totally different world.
Yeah, that's right. And I, in the very beginning, had a fellow by the name of Ernie Kaufman on, who was a professional handicapper out of Las Vegas. He was on during football season, on a Thursday into a Friday morning before that weekend of games. We took calls for 3 or 4 hours for him talking about various games coming up that weekend. He was very popular, and then we had to stop with him being on.
Because the station told you not to?
Yes.
And I didn't know this. I learned this in the book. Check it out. You could pre-order it now. November 18th, Steve Summers, Me Hear You There. I learned this in the book. That's where the over the night and under the covers, overnight and under the covers came from. That's what you said in the book, that the over-under reference when having that guy on.
Yes,
what?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's good. We got to hear this. That's wild.
Yeah, Ernie Kaufman was his name. I don't even know if he's still alive. Originally from Boston, living in New York and Vegas. He had homes in both places. And he always would say, you can listen to me, but don't trust what I'm saying, because you'll end up losing more than you'll win. But he really analyzed like you wouldn't believe, and won an awful lot of games that he was picking, and he took one call after another. The phones lit up like a Christmas tree lights, and we would take him on at 12:10 after an opening monologue. We would take him on at 12:10, 12:15. He was with me till 4:30.
And overnight, taking, under the covers?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what you were with that? Ahead of the curve.
Go to Twitter, X, and it's Steve Summers, WFAN, and the book is Me Here, You There, and you can order it, through Amazon. And in their book section, it's highly rated. It was number one in sports journalism right after it was posted on X and or Twitter, and then it dropped into, went from sports journalism to journalism. and it was number two or three, now in the category of Amazon books, about to come out, because it comes out November 18, but you can pre-order it now there through Amazon. But now it's like number eight of their top 50. So I'm flattered by that and honored by that, and also a little surprised by that, too, because I wasn't Mike and the Mad Dog. I wasn't you two working. Well, I mean,
come on. Now you're overdoing it. Yeah. Now, come on.
No, well, no, no, no. Well, you two are here for a reason.
Because they couldn't get anybody else. Yeah, exactly. Because you retired, so they had to find us.
That's exactly right.
We appreciate that. That's very kind of you. I want to make it more about you. And I, like I said, I've worked with you for a long time, so I've known some of these stories, but I do think listeners can learn things from this, because even I learn things from this book. And one thing that I think is very important is, I have some notes, some personal stuff that I want to get into with you. One thing that I think is very important for people to understand is, because I remember it from afar, producing for you, seeing you at times throughout the course of a show or during a game in between shows, right? You'd come on before a game, throw to the game, we'd watch the Met game, you'd be writing or reacting or doing whatever you're doing, then we'd come on afterward. But there were a lot of times where you were getting calls from your brother, Michael, and having to take care of him, and you never really brought that, like, I think it's incredible that you were able to separate that from being on the air, but you were dealing with a lot taking care of your brother.
Well, I had to, because first of all, I had cancer at one time, some years ago. It's gone. Prostate cancer, had 10 and a half weeks of radiation, and I'm most proud of the fact that I went through the radiation every morning, Monday through Friday, at Lenox Hill, on the Upper East Side. I went through radiation for 10 and a half weeks and never missed a day of work.
Wow.
And didn't talk about that radiation or the prostate cancer. I was lucky because it hadn't spread. And you have options. Chemotherapy, the side effects with that. You also could have surgery and have your prostate removed, or you could have radiation. I was lucky to get radiation. You feel nothing. It took me longer to undress and put the gown on before wheeling me into the tube than the actual radiation time taken itself. And I don't have it now, years later. But it is important to get yourself checked if you're a male or female too, but nonetheless, especially if you're over 50. So that's a message of that. But why I didn't talk about the cancer, and I also had...
Well, your brother as well.
Because
I remember you... I mean, I didn't know what was going on.
Well,
but I remember some of the conversations that I could tell you were stressed out, and then you wrote about it in the book.
Well, in the book, yeah. But on the air, I wasn't paid to do that. And people have their own problems. Not every family is the Cosby family when Cosby was the perfect family. But everyone has some dysfunction in their family. And I didn't want calls all night long. We hope you get better, or we're sorry to hear about your brother. That kind of thing, whether it was my own or my brother. And, of course, you two would do the same for a member of the family who was born disabled. After my mother and my father died, who was left? Me. And he was living in Boston, living in Brookline. He wasn't that far away, a four-hour drive, that kind of thing. He had kidney cancer in 99. They took out the kidney. But he didn't understand that with one kidney, you have to be very careful. He had the worst diet. You had a Google salad to show him what a healthy meal might look like. He'd eat a gallon of ice cream a day, not a quart, not a pint. And he'd have double orders. He was way overweight, had a number of physical and, of course, mental issues. But he was family, and I did my best. He passed away at the age of 76, and nobody in the family thought he would live that long. But he did, and, you know, I hope he's in a better place.
He is, and to Sal's point, why Sal brings that up, I mean, not that this would be easy either, but, you know, to go into a conventional office and do your job, put your head down for 8-9 hours, and then go and deal with that, that's one thing. To deal with that, and then get on the air and entertain and watch games and be up to speed and make it sound like you're good.
Well, an excellent point you're making, because it made me for a while, for a couple of hours, forget real life in real time.
I could see that.
With what was most important. It took me away from that for a little while, although, you know, it was in my mind, on my mind. I talked about it with Peter Hoffman a little bit, my own issue. I didn't say I had cancer. They knew I had a disabled brother to some degree. I didn't go into a lot of detail with that, but they knew. I got to know both Paul Rosenberg and your producer, Peter Hoffman. They were there to hear me a little bit during a downtime when I was here, but everything else was to focus on what my job was. Otherwise, I was going to get calls. We hope, we're sorry to hear about your brother.
Right, derail the show, right?
Yeah, right. Yep. I mean, and people have their own issues.
Yep.
So, I mean, why should I burden them with mine?
One other thing that I learned, like I've heard about the legends of, well, Summers used to have alcohol in his coffee cups or whatever, but I started in 2003. You've been sober from, you said, the late mid to late 90s?
Oh, yeah. Well, the late 80s into the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you got the job, though, because it says you went to in the book, it says you went to rehab for 30 days. Was that during the beginning of your successful overnight show right as you got here?
Yes. And if I didn't go, and I didn't think, see, I began to think that the problem I had was other people thinking that I was on substances, whether it was drugs or alcohol, and alcohol is a drug. And if I didn't go to rehab, and I could have left at any time.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service. Real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
But I stayed for the full 30 days because I was told if I didn't go, that I would lose my job. And I was off to a good start, and I didn't want to do that. And at rehab in Carmel, New York, upstate, they thought the reason I drank at all was because of my mother and my father. And I said to them, and I'm going to say it to you guys on the air, they didn't drink. My brother didn't drink. He ate everything, but he never drank. If anything, my mother and my father, maybe a toast at a wedding, a bar mitzvah, they didn't drink. There was no alcohol at home. And there were many nights as a kid even when I would go out with my friends, you know, to maybe pick somebody up at a bar when you could do that, and it actually happened. Bottom line is there were nights I didn't drink, and I didn't drink every day. There were nights before coming here at midnight where I would go out to dinner with somebody that I had made a friend, had a blind date. And I had a lot of blind dates. And the German Shepherd never got in the way, by the way. but bad line. Terrible. And I hope that's not in the book. But the bottom line is I'd have a glass of wine. I'd have a drink or two. But I wasn't ever drunk, you know, but you could maybe smell it, I guess. And I fought against going to rehab and so forth and so on. But I did go because I didn't want to lose my job. And again, I don't even, I smoke still. that would be more difficult for me to quit cigarettes than it did to quit drinking altogether. I didn't want any, it was such a negative thing. And but they tried to put it on my mother and my father. And I kept saying, no, it's me. I'm here because I am the drinker in the family, nobody else. And so forth and so on. And they said, well, you know, they wanted to talk to my parents. I said, my parents didn't even know I was there. I would get up in the middle of the night sharing a cot with a crack addict. That's how you had to stay there with other alcoholics, drug users. And I would call my mother and my father in the middle of the night, charge it to my home phone here, and tell them everything was fine.
Wow.
I didn't want to ruin what was pleasant for them.
Did you not want to?
They never knew.
Wow.
I was there.
So you didn't want to disappoint them or burden them?
Correct. Both.
Both.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Both. Oh no! Wow. It wasn't their problem.
I got you. Totally understood.
It was mine. Yeah. And yet the counselors there wanted to blame them for me. Mm. No, they didn't. And I would say, no, you're not doing that. They brought tears to my eyes the day they wanted me in front of them to call my parents. And I said, I'm not doing it. They
Good
had nothing to do with this.
Good for you.
You have to believe that.
There you go. Little mix up here. I'm sure you've hit this. But I don't know if it's in the book. I've skimmed the book. I've got to jump into it more
you're
thoroughly.
You're not missing anything.
No, stop. He loved it. He raved about it. Yeah, not just because he knows you. I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, well.
And what I've read is very good.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have it in there, I may have missed it. What is the origin of the yellow legal pad? How did it start? Tell us.
Well, I just went to Staples one day looking for paper. And it wasn't, you know, here's the thing. You bring up an excellent point. Everyone used to say, oh, the monologues were good. Not all of them were good, of course. But everyone would say that said something about the monologue, you're a good writer. No. When you write for radio, you're writing for the ear. Mm-hmm. They only hear it once. Has to be very simple. If you're writing for print, whether it's a blog, a website, a newspaper, whatever it may be, you can reread it. But with radio, you hear it once. Then, of course, during the course of the program, you know, you refer to a lot of points. You know, somebody might be listening to you an hour into your program that didn't hear your open. Mm-hmm. So you, again, may not do the monologue, but you're talking about what was in it. But I always thought it was the delivery more than the writing. And the podcast that I'm going to do a little bit later on today, after you guys having me on, it's so appreciated, I write a monologue for that. And then I say goodnight, and that's it. No. And then, but we can't take any calls,
yeah. You
know, but we do play a little production. And make it as interesting as we can. And I don't get paid for it. I'm doing it.
Yes.
Not yet.
Well, you don't. Come on. You made enough money. You don't need. No, you're not doing it for
I have more money than Trump.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, you got time for another segment here? You got somewhere to go?
No.
Okay.
Do I have time? I'm retired. What is it?
And don't go trying.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, I use them too.
I use dark ink. I use Uniball.
You want to take this time to go take a break out front and go maybe have a cigarette down in the elevator?
I need to take a pish. that's all.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Rick Cadena. Yes, you can. Okay. Don't get stuck in the elevator if you
Hopefully
go down.
Hopefully it doesn't take you too long, though.
The portion of the show is brought to you by Ray Cadena, Mercedes-Benz of Edison, and by Moderna. More with the schmooze when we come back. To help promote the book here, Steve Summers, Me Here, You There, My 3 Decades Overnight Under the Covers, Schmoozing SPORTS as Captain Midnight for WFAN, November 18th. It comes out. You can pre-order it today. Okay, couple of things here. There's a lot still that we want to get to with you, Steve. But I learned some things about you. I'm going to give you quick hitters, and you can pick on which one you want to talk about. You have hammer toes. I was not aware of that, so I learned about the hammer toes, which prevented you from being a better baseball player, potentially.
Well, I had no speed.
Yeah, okay. Joan Rivers called you on the overnight.
That is right.
Had no idea that that was the case. And
she called because somebody had brought up about where I live and blah, blah, blah. And I brought up that my apartment was a mess. And Joan Rivers, and we called back to make sure it was actually her, and she called to suggest a cleaning lady.
Joan Rivers, like that's a big, wow. I know Seinfeld, well, we can get into that, but Joan Rivers?
Yeah, Joan Rivers, but she didn't want to be on the air. We wanted her on.
Oh, she didn't come on, but she did call.
She called in on the regular call-in line and suggested a cleaning lady for my apartment. So... And that happened.
Okay, and then one more. Well, there's more, but just the one I want to bring up. Yeah. Howard Cosell got you suspended?
I was working TV in Atlanta, WXIA, an ABC affiliate. He had come down from New York for a dinner with an affiliate ABC station. And I did a commentary. I did sports Monday through Friday there. For only a couple of years, I was working for Confederates. I didn't like it at all. I hated it. And I got lucky because I ended up with Gumbel in L.A. at KNBC. Anyway, but the bottom line is I did a commentary during my sportscast in which Cosell was watching because he was in Atlanta for the dinner. And I basically talked about him being a caricature of himself. And he complained about it. Here was a guy that made his living complaining about other people and complained about me talking about him becoming the caricature of himself. For 2 days, I was suspended by a general manager who not only had a spittoon in his office, but used it.
Really? Spittoon? Wow.
He was a Confederate from the Stonewall Jackson.
You want one more, BT? You'll like this.
Go for
one more. I did not know that you were dating somebody. You went on a vacation. And
oh, yeah, Ronnie.
And she left you. I was crying of laughter reading this one line.
Well, I didn't talk about it for years. It happened in 1975. And she was the girl that I was with, and we went on a cruise. Now, the waiter at our table, she liked very much what he had to serve, which was himself. So, and I suspect...
And is that what you tweeted the other day, Sal? It is, right?
Yes, yeah. I tweeted the page. Yeah. It was so good.
I was very upset by it at the time. And on the air, after years gone by here,
oh, man.
I told that story, Love Boat for her, Ship of Fools for me.
Oh, man. But you recovered nicely, didn't you? You got a little game. You got some bounce
and
back
I
there,
suspected
Stevie.
Something was wrong. Because we'd go to dinner. We would go to dinner. And she would leave to say, I'm going to do my makeup. I'm going to refresh with my makeup and be gone for an hour
no
or two.
Way.
Where was she having plastic surgery?
Something was so getting rearranged.
She was seeing him, you know, in his stateroom.
Wow, Steve, that is.
And, right. Oh, and now here's the.
I'm sorry to laugh at that because.
I laugh about it now, too.
I know, but I could tell you were hurt by it. And even the book, you say, like, some people will find this funny.
I was crying in my pina coladas.
That's tough. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I. No, it bothered me
a
lot.
I don't blame you. And it didn't bother anybody.
Yeah, and here's the ironic thing. Years later, I'm working in Atlanta. I got along with her parents very well. This was while I was in Sacramento. and the bottom line, doing TV there. And she had left a note on my car that she wanted to meet me. And she had a boyfriend at the time. I should have realized that we were young playing the field, which you could do.
Yeah.
And so we went on this cruise after we had been going together for about a year. And the bottom line is that she met the waiter, she moved to the Canary Islands, where he was from, off the coast of Spain, then stayed with him from what I understand from her parents, who I got along with very well, and wanted me to marry her even. And not a Jewish girl, Ronnie McKee or Veronica McKee.
Irish, Scottish, yes. German, yeah, you go.
Through and through, God love her.
Uh-huh.
And bottom line is I'm in Atlanta now, and she comes back from Europe. She had stayed with the guy, the waiter, for about 6 months in the Canary Islands, and then with girlfriends traveled around Europe. Came back to the United States on her way back to Sacramento, stops in Atlanta, calls me and wants to get together again. I said no.
Good for you, standing ground.
You know, not even one last...
Yeah, I thought about it.
Right.
I thought about it because...
Under the covers, talking about SEX.
Oh, listen, you're talking about under the covers. but I thought about it, but I would never be able to trust her again.
You got to have a little self-respect. Yeah. You got to draw the line somewhere. There you go. All right, so this is a random one. You don't have to spend too much time on it. I feel like I know completely what kind of music like Beningo loves and Dog loves Bruce. You were born, obviously, out in San Francisco, and so many, you know, groups were spawned out there in the 60s and the 70s. Like, what's your favorite type of music?
Well, it's rock and roll, really. Rhythm and blues, little soul music. A good friend of mine in college, Ben Fong Torres, and I'm going to have him on my podcast, an original writer of Rolling Stone magazine, the last to interview John Lennon, the last to interview Jim Morrison.
Wow.
And an Asian actor played Ben in the movie Almost Famous.
Wow. What an interesting guy.
With Kate Hudson
Great
in
movie.
That movie.
Great movie.
And the Asian character was Ben Fong Torres with Rolling Stone. And he's retired now. He lives out in the Bay Area. And I wanted to write more about him. In the book, I think I made reference to Ben, but I got in touch with him from a high school teammate on the baseball team who was a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle and has written a number of books, including one that was a bestseller about the Zodiac Killer, and Duffy Jennings, his name. And I called Duffy, you know, only about 2 weeks ago, and I said, Duff, and I went to high school with Duffy, so I knew him. I said, Duffy, do you know how I can get in touch with Ben Fong Torres? And he gave me his phone number, and now I'm going to get Ben on my podcast. He's not really a sports fan, but music-wise.
That's a good one. I'm going to listen to that. I like it.
Ben was very close with Rolling Stone, very close to Bill Graham, who had Fillmore West and Fillmore East. Ben... was into Cream and Led Zeppelin.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't so much into the acid
the hard
rock
stuff as much. Not like Jimi Hendrix.
No,
and
I knew of him.
No.
Janis Joplin.
Yeah, for sure.
Creedence, Jefferson
like
Airplane.
Creedence Clearwater, maybe.
Who?
Creedence Clearwater.
Oh, yeah, great.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, great. The Eagles,
yes,
great. Creedence Clearwater, great.
Okay,
but not into the acid rock. Now Ben was. And he was in college. I was the sports director of our campus radio station. He was not the music director, but he was partly program director with the music, and he was a writer for the campus newspaper. But a great writer. Ben Fong Torres. Only very happy to mention his name.
BT and Sal in studio with Steve Summers. Sports Talk on WFAN is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. One other thing from the book, and I'll always be grateful. Like, I love Jerry Seinfeld, and I love The Seinfeld Show. I remember I wasn't even working on your show yet, but I believe I was an intern in 2003. You had Seinfeld come in studio at the old Astoria place. He went around and shook everybody's hand, including my own. Made eye contact. I'll never forget that. As an intern. It wasn't just Jerry Seinfeld big time in people. He went in there for Steve, shook everybody's hand, so I love that. I do think, though, and there's great insight. You share some emails between you and Seinfeld
and
back
and
forth.
And he wrote the forward.
Okay, but that's the thing. Like, I think you're almost... He called you because he's a fan of you. I know how you met him. You could get into that. You don't need Seinfeld's fame. You're Steve Summers.
Like, oh, stop.
No, I'm serious. Like, you almost overdid it with the Seinfeld stuff.
No. Listen, I've been very lucky. And you guys know all too well. You want to be good, and you don't need anyone to tell you when it's working, whatever it is that you're doing, whatever your approach is, whatever your presentation is. But I also am smart enough to know what I don't know. But what I do know is when I did a monologue or an entire program without the energy, making mistakes, maybe, you know, with facts, with some information, I always tried to hold myself accountable and responsible as you guys do. And that is the way it should be with anyone on or off the air. But the bottom line is, what was your question again?
About Seinfeld.
Daryl, are you with us? Yeah, the Seinfeld thing, like, I get that you have a relationship with him. I almost feel like you're, like, without Seinfeld ever listening to you or coming on your show, you'd still be one of the greatest to ever do this.
Oh, will you stop?
No, no,
come
I'm
on,
serious.
Sal.
But I get, like, Seinfeld sells and... Well,
you know how I met. It's in the book,
yes.
How I met him.
Yeah, go ahead. You could say the story.
You know, and for me, he didn't. When I walked up to him in the bodega at about 1:30 in the morning, he was with George Wallace, a good friend of his to this day, also a comedian. And I debated because I wasn't the type as a kid to ask for autographs and all that kind of thing. I always felt intimidated that I was bothering somebody, so I never did it. But he and Wallace were the only two people in the bodega about 1:30 in the morning. I had watched a repeat in July of Saturday Night Live, and then it was still very warm, and overnight, 75 degrees, 80 in the summertime in July. And I went down to the corner bodega to get a pint of ice cream when I saw them. And I had a business card that we all got at the very beginning. It said WFAN, red, white, and blue, my name on it. And I said, do I walk up to him? I'm a fan. And I walk up to him and say hello. I don't mean to bother. And that's what I did. I said, I walked up to him and I said, don't mean to bother you. Just want to let you know I'm a fan. And this is where I work. I just started at this radio station. He never made eye contact as I was talking. But he looked at the card, looked up, made eye contact, and said, you're Steve Summers? And I went, boing. Oh, no. I mean, really. Not today, what my wife has to do today, you know, like in India, they have the snake with the snake in the basket and the guy with the flute. That's my wife has to. She bought a flute. What? So the bottom line, really, I couldn't believe he knew he was like a listener. And then he called in, regular caller, the next Monday. This was a Saturday night, Sunday morning. And he called in Monday night as Jerry from Queens, really Jerry from Manhasset. And, yeah, he co-hosted with me a couple of times. Are we running out of time?
No.
No, if you got to get rid of me, get rid of me.
No, I'm not getting rid of you.
Because you're not taking calls. What is it?
No, why? You don't even have headphones on to take calls.
No, that's right.
Yeah, no, I just was saying the Seinfeld. I think it's great, but I just want you to know, like, I would listen to you regardless of if Seinfeld calls or not. Like, yeah, it's cool to have him on.
Well,
I like your show, too.
And that he gave the okay to put emails in the book. And also
that
write a
cool.
forward. Well, that's going to help sell the book,
right.
I would think.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting insight to see you two go back and forth like that.
But I will say he's been very, very generous to me with his time. But I'm not a part of his inner circle. I didn't get invited to that lousy movie he made. Wait a minute. Now the book will really sell. I'm getting controversial.
I'll tell you, you are, you know, I was telling Sal, I think it was during a commercial break where Sal worked with you, Hoff, like, so they know you differently. I've seen it. I've always shown respect, like, you know, as soon as when I was down the hall nationally.
Well, same with you.
Well, you know, no, but this is about you. So I just, listening to you all these years, I'm like, you know, he's... I guess what I'm trying to say is you're out of your mind nuts. I didn't know that you were this crazy. You're nuts. You are crazy in a good way. Yeah. Like, you have an edge that I don't know that our listeners necessarily knew that you had. Love it.
Of course, nuts is true. I was really nuts when I was younger, riding on the hood of a car through a wall of fire, trying to jump a motorcycle over a goalpost in Atlanta.
That was in Atlanta, yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, in the days of George Plimpton,
yep.
All because of Paper Lion, you know, this intellectual is like working out with the Detroit Lions. Then he writes a book about it, a guy who wore a bow tie and a vest and very intellectual. And so news directors around the country with their TV guys wanted them to get involved.
Yeah.
Evel Knievel style.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a couple of those things, which I would never do at this point or ever again, even if I was younger.
It's a fascinating read. You're going to learn a lot about it, about Steve and behind the scenes and the career and all that stuff. We went over a lot. We wanted to come back with this. We had to take a quick break here. Don't yell at me. Yes, can you come back for one more segment?
Of course.
Okay, one more segment because there is some other stuff that I want to get into.
Okay.
And we want to get your thoughts on today's stuff, like the Mets and things like that. We're in studio. Steve Sommers' book comes out November 18th. Pre-order it now. Steve Sommers, me here, you there, covering his entire career beyond WFAN, and then, of course, some insight into WFAN.
And you can't pre-order on Amazon.
Pre-order on Amazon, the emails with Jerry Seinfeld. Now, you touched on this a little bit earlier, and we talked about some of the, you know, sensitive things in the book. You did. You said controversy sells. You did. Did you send a copy of this book to Russ Salzberg? Because you shredded Russ.
Well, the show ended up being okay at the end of 5 years. But in the very beginning, I didn't want to leave overnight. It wasn't Russ per se. It was that I was having a great time, the happiest time of my life in broadcasting. I'm in New York. I'm overnight. I'm getting immediate feedback from callers. It was more positive than anything. And I was happy. I remember telling my mother and my father when they were alive, I've been renewed after a year. And they were so proud and happy because they know how I had been out of work before, how I had been fired before. It happens in a career, ups and downs. So I was happy. I didn't want to go midday.
But then you had to work with Russ. And
it was good cop, like bad cop, because his ratings were not very good when he was working by himself. And they didn't want to fire him. They figured they'd put the good cop and the bad cop together. The restrictions that I had, I couldn't do an opening monologue, really. We had a talk about what was going on, and that's the way it should be with two people.
Sure.
And I couldn't do production, per se. And he made fun of the fearless forecaster.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
That's crossing a line.
I remember that.
In the office area that I had, he wrote with a Sharpie on the glass wall, "That's a loss."
Oh, now,
and here's the thing, the fearless...
You guys are just very different. Well, that's the bottom line. You're just very different.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
It was difficult, but it ended up, the ratings went up thanks to me. And, and it did. And then after 5 years of working 10 to 1, you know, they disbanded the ratings. We were still in the top five. And in our demographic, in our time period. But for the most part, in the very beginning, I didn't want to leave overnight. I was very, very happy doing it. I adjusted to the hours. Not a problem. And was very, very happy.
But you always told me working with Russ was like working with your family.
Yes, the Adams family.
Look how he sets him up, the Manson family.
Yeah, I know. But I knew that you two didn't get along just from stuff that we talk about. I wish I could find the page. I was trying to find it. People got to buy the book just for that. You did go to town on him pretty good there.
Well, I was honest about it, and I was honest with him also about it. So the bottom line is he keeps in touch a lot.
Really?
He calls me a lot to usually complain about the radio station. And
Is that true?
No, I'm making it up. But the bottom line is that he does call and he always says, "Let's get together for lunch. I'm hungry. I'm still waiting." For years now, he has been calling and let's get together for lunch, but it hasn't happened.
But it's funny how time kind of dilutes anger, whatever. Because I said before, I see Russ all the time. And I love Russ. Like, I've coached his grandkids. I see him. He's at all the games.
Okay.
Like, I am a big fan. You guys are just very different. That's the bottom.
Different
could be really good.
Yeah.
Unless it crosses a threshold. I think the wounds heal. And you guys got to get the lunch.
Yes. And there are always going to be creative differences with anyone you work with. You guys know from that.
100%. We have that. Like, I had to learn to do a show with somebody. It's different from doing it by yourself.
to do it solo is one thing,
mm-hmm.
where you're not compromising or, you know, giving up time or ideas to somebody else.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, it was working for a good time, and but the ratings were got stale, and also probably money had something to do with
always
it as
does.
Well.
Always does.
So it always does. It's that kind of a business. And so it's, well, it's like any business where they cut you back or downsize. And it's an exciting business to be in. It's rewarding and satisfying, but it could also be treacherous, where people lose their jobs yeah. right before Christmas.
That's true.
It's part of the business, but it's part of the challenge yep. you take on
yep.
by choosing a broadcasting career.
Can I just
read a passage here real quick from it?
Yeah.
Page 133. He was yelling and screaming and hanging up on people. Why is that not a good thing? he wasn't a radio guy. John Minko said Salisbury looked at WFN as a part-time job. You said a creative type? No. Inventive? No. User-friendly? Uh-uh. The only ones listening to him were his family.
Well, that is a quote from somebody else.
And they brought you in, you said, specifically to cut him off.
Well, that's right. That was my direction. You know, stop the yelling and the screaming. And he on his own kind of did that. I would try to interrupt him. But the line about the only people listening to him when he was working alone was Mike Breen.
That wasn't in the book. I'm sorry.
Well, now it should be.
But, all right, but, enough railing on my boy but, Russ but, here. I got to draw the line. That's well, it. Enough. Well, we're moving well, on. I love Russ.
And,
that's
and,
it.
And Mike.
I'm starting to feel bad for Russ
well,
now.
His
it's
ratings,
in the book. I love him.
Controversy
sells. I know, but I love the guy.
Well, yeah. No, listen, but his ratings were not good.
I got you.
They were really. Breen said that. Doing sports on Imus.
I got you.
And no, that's why they paired me with him.
I got you.
He didn't get fired. He didn't get fired. He was still working at Channel 9. And Joel Hollander, the GM, the godfather to his two daughters, and they were neighbors in Wayne, New Jersey, and may still be, I'm sure. And the bottom line is, I can understand not wanting to fire him. He was a terrific TV presence. And, again, radio, that style didn't work for him. But the yelling and the screaming did work for other people and other businesses, including this one, but it didn't work for him.
So we want to get a couple current things, though, yeah. right? Before we let you go, and we have, I think, the rest of the show, so we'll finish it up with Steve Summers in studio. But the one thing before we even get to, like, the Mets and the offseason, this past year, some other things currently, Knicks maybe, the thing about firing up a microphone, it really is like a drug. And not everybody loves radio. A lot of people do radio.
Yeah.
And I would hope that it comes across, and we'll let others judge that I love radio, that my partner loves it. It's very apparent that you just love the spoken word more than most people, that it is innately in you.
Well, here's the thing. Radio is intimate and personal.
Yep.
And so I didn't mind that. I enjoyed that, celebrated that with callers. I wanted friends. I wanted them to feel comfortable talking with me as I was talking to them. And I've always said, on and off the air forever, it was a two-way street. What they would say about me, I could say about them. What they did, the audience and management, was give me a breath, give me a life, give me a career, and make me go through the happiest times of my life.
All right, Steve, we got to wrap it up here. I just want to say, like, for me, it was an honor to be able to say that I worked on the other side of the glass. Even though I was nervous, you were here holding up your hand, ready to hit that audio, whatever piece it may be, being a part of those opens from the other side of the glass, an honor and a privilege, especially looking back at your career and some of the fondest times I have.
You helped me a great deal.
No.
No, you did.
No, but
no you did. You helped me. You enabled me to get through some tough programs. Sal, now you always say that about me, that I'm, you know, being too humble or whatever. Yeah.
I was not a good. But let me just say this for one second, please. Like, I love being on the air with BT during the middays. It's great. Nothing compares to the fun that we had in Astoria watching games together, me, you, Huesler, Schweiback, or whoever else was behind the scenes, Gio, like all those guys in and out, those were some of the best memories I have in my life. And you were the one doing those shows in between. It was an honor and a privilege to be working with you.
Well, I can say the same about today. You two having me on, both of you are gifted. Both of you, I can't thank you enough. You're giving me a little airtime, a lot of airtime, actually, and helping to sell the book. I so appreciate, I'm honored that you have had me on today. And that is sincere. I'll go home and kind of rethink everything that I've said that you brought up, blah, blah, blah. I can't thank you both enough for having me on. A real honor.
I'll give Sal the last word. You guys go back such a long ways. I just want to say very quickly here, you know, there's only so many WFAN shows in history and so many microphones to go around. That I know that he thinks this way, as do I. Like, when we fire up our mics, we're part of the history of the station is with us. And it's important to us. And you're a big piece of that. So,
well,
respect. I fell asleep to you so many nights. I've told you this before.
Yeah.
Legend, doors always open. Best of luck with the book, and really good having you in.
Bless you so much. Thank you. Bless you both. And thank you so, so much from what heart I have. For having me on.
Steve Summers, legend. Me here, you there, November 18th. Pre-order now at Amazon. BT and Sal on the Fan.